Forevermore, a romance anthology, is out now. Comprised of 10 interconnecting romance short stories surrounding the Moore family and a wedding in Napa, California, the anthology is written by 10 Filipino-American authors. My short story, Win Your Love, is a second chance competition romance. After being unceremoniously stood up by her fake date to her cousin's wedding, Alexandra Moore's day goes from bad to worse when she has to fight over the last gift of the wedding registry with former neighbor and all-around rival, Jordan Franco. But as the wedding and reception minutes click by, along with their constant bickering and mini competitions, Alex and Jordan reignite the spark that almost brought them together years ago. Will they let their ambition reign? Or will they finally concede that love wins above all? Order the anthology at bookstoread.com/forevermore. Welcome to the Stories to Love podcast, the podcast where I fangirl over creators and find out all about their inspiration in hopes to boost our own inspiration. I am your host, Tiff Marcello, an inspiration seeker and your resident fangirl. This is Tiff of the Stories to Love podcast, and this is episode 85. Here with me today is Allie Frank and Asha Humans. Allie Frank has worked in education for over 20 years, from an overcrowded, cacophonous public high school to a pristine private girls' school. She has been a teacher, curriculum leader, college counselor, assistant head, school co-founder, sometimes pastor, often mayor, and de facto parent therapist. A graduate of Cornell and Stanford University, Allie lives in the Pacific Northwest with her husband and two daughters. She is the co-author of Tiny Imperfections, Never Meant to Meet You, and The Better Half, and an essayist in Moms Don't Have Time To, a quarantine anthology. Asha Humans is the daughter of an educational pioneer and children's hospital administrator. After graduating UC Berkeley, Asha spent the next 20 years teaching elementary school. Asha continues to work in schools in the Pacific Northwest, believing children keep her youthful, as do her husband and two sons. She is the co-author of Tiny Imperfections, Never Meant to Meet You, and The Better Half. In this episode, we discussed how their first three books are love letters to educators and how their most recent release, The Better Half, rose from the inspirations of body autonomy and the concept of arrival. We discussed how these two authors crafted their main character, taking from different inspirations and their overall mission in the writing. Finally, we talked about their strengths in their teamwork, about their own me cute, and how they make things work as co-authors. I want to thank all of you who have subscribed to this podcast. If you haven't, I'd love it if you click to follow so you can get notifications of every new episode. And if you have found this podcast helpful and fun, please leave a rating and review. It really does help to boost discoverability. You can even share this episode with a friend. For more information about me, Tiff, and submitting to this podcast, please head on to my website at tiffmarcello.com. And here we go to my in conversation with Allie Frank and Asha Humans. Everyone, this is Tiff of the Stories to Love podcast, and here with me is Allie Frank and Asha Humans.
Hello.
How are you? So these wonderful ladies are my tall poppy siblings and also authors or co-authors of three best-selling novels, most recent, The Better Half, which I totally loved. I not only read it, but I listened to it at the same time. So I kind of like bounced back and forth, which was so cool. Such an experience. I love doing it that way. So ladies, tell us what The Better Half is about.
Well, I'll go first.
You are Asha.
I am Asha. The Better Half is a story about a woman a seasoned woman in life who has decided that she has arrived. She has accomplished many great things in her career. She has a wonderful daughter away in boarding school. She is happy that her ex-husband is also away across the country, and she's ready to live life on her own terms. along with her best friend Marisol. They're having a great time and gearing up to the start of the next school year, where Nina, our main character, is head of school at a storied private school. But on their girls' trip to celebrate a new chapter, Nina, she has a little misstep, and she brings along something away from her trip that is going to make her start thinking about how it affects the second half of her life. She's under a time crunch to make a decision about what she's going to do. But she does come to discover, through love of a new romantic interest, through love from her father, Fitzroy, through love of her daughter, Sandra, and love of her best friend, Marisol, that the second half of her life might just be the better half of her life.
Wow, that was a great, great pitch. I mean, that was just awesome. I mean, it really did encompass the book so well done. Okay, because it's very hard, folks out there, to be able to really encompass what a book is about in a, you know, in a few sentences, especially a book such as this that had so many parts to it that I was drawn to as a seasoned woman.
Yes.
In the height of what I think is a pretty gosh darn great career, right? A second career. I was really drawn to it, as well as the fact that this is all set in a storied, you know, elite school, essentially, if we were really to lay it out that way. So this is your third book together. So we're going to jump in and talk about, well, no, let's talk about the inspiration of the book. So let's hear from Allie this time.
Yes.
So what was the inspiration for this book? What was the kernel that really set the both of you off on this tangent?
There are a couple kernels. First of all, between Asha and I, we have over 40 years of experience working in schools. So we love schools. We love educators. And our first through third book, we're all essentially a love letter to people who work in education. They're funny and they're humorous and they're heartfelt and they're all those things. But ultimately, they are a love letter to educators. So we have definitely led with that in our first three books. But also at the time when we started writing The Better Half was the early rumblings about Roe v. Wade and what may happen at the Supreme Court level. And we were in conversation with each other. We have our own views on that. But how curious it is that whenever this conversation about choice comes up, it's always rooted in this idea of young, single, mostly disenfranchised women. And the conversation never evolves to what about those women who are older, who are more seasoned, who could have all the resources to expand their family, who have already raised their children, and find them faced with the issue of choice. We don't really talk or consider those women when we're talking about autonomy of body. And so Asha and I were really interested in that topic, never imagining where the early rumblings about Roe v. Wade were going to ultimately end up. But that was one of the inspirations of our book, was that conversation that was happening in the country. And then our other big one was this idea that in Western culture, and particularly American culture, we're very focused on this idea of arrival. If I work this hard, if I buy these things, if I can afford this, I will have arrived, as if there really is a destination to get to. And there really isn't. Or how do you know if you're really there? And how do you know, you know, you might have a further arrival down the road. So we wanted to look at this American concept of arrival. And so those were our inspirations. But there is a third theme that we can talk about later that ended up swirling around in the country that was an interesting coincidence with part of our book.
I just love that. You know, let's talk about Nina since we're already there. Yeah, so she is seasoned. She's in her 40s and she thinks that she has arrived. She was trying to be head of school and there she is and she's gotten it. And now she's been thrown off course emotionally, right? So, how did you craft her then? Like, where did she come from? How did you create her? And how did you choose those secondary characters with her?
Well, I like to think of Nina as a little bit of that kernel of doubt in my mind that I have for messages I receive about life, about women, about lots of things, race, religion, so many things. And you see these tropes in the media. Well, once you're in your 40s, you're not really worth that much anymore as a woman. You're past your childbearing prime, supposedly. Getting a job late in life is harder. You get Social Security, and then there's nothing more career-wise for you. Menopause comes, and you just have hot flashes. None of that has to be true. And it's often not true for plenty of women. But I just didn't want to swallow those messages. And I wanted Nina to explore them and break them down on her own. So that was part of my inspiration for her sort of attitude or who she is or her character.
Nina herself, she's loosely based off a head of school who I absolutely adore at a K-8 girls' school in San Francisco, who is a woman of color. And her way of messaging when talking publicly with kids, with parents, whatever, is through poem. She's a beautiful orator. So there's an element of Nina that's really fashioned off this head of school who we just adore. And then Nina, in relationship to, all the other characters, when you're in your 40s, you're squarely in the sandwich generation. So there has to be the, not just easy in is easy out everyday relationship with your parents. There has to be something big going on because it's hard as they age. And then teenagers are emotionally challenging. Yes, physically challenging when they're younger, but I think anyone with kids would say once they're teenagers, woo, and take that physical exhaustion over the emotional exhaustion any day. And then with her, having Nina, and this is true for all our female protagonists, having Nina have a true intellectual and professional drive and ambition, and having her have a very rich and full friendship life. We always write our protagonists so that they are women whose lives are full of love and full of support. And when a potential romance comes around, it's not to answer this massive hole that's been in the character's life or to make it her life what it's always meant to be and to complete it, but that, the idea that I have so much love in my life, and it turns out there's room for more. There's always room for more love. But it's not the completion of love being delivered by one person. It's just an adding to an already full pot.
Yeah, I mean, she definitely is so relatable. In some scenes, like she's dealing with drama in one part of her life, and then it's sort of like she has to pivot because there's something going on at work where she has to go investigate. And then she has to pivot because her daughter is like MIA, like, where is she? Why isn't she calling me back? So it's this all this stuff that's coming together. This book encompasses so many themes, which I really thought was, if I had read the synopsis, I would think, oh my gosh, this is really ambitious, but it was, executed so well. You addressed race and economic disparity because this is an elite school, right? You have a woman that has needs to make a choice. You've got finding love in the second part of her life, right? And being a woman that is in that sandwich generation, which I completely feel. So you have all of these things. How did you row her and this whole plot in One Direction because you could have easily like fallen off the cliff talking about Fitzroy alone, and his shenanigans, right? Like it could have just, you could have gone over there like 100% and things would have still been happening on the side. So how did you do that together? Because, when I asked about the inspiration for Nina, you both came with two, yes, they melded together, but right? You're two separate people with two separate thoughts. So how did you do that to keep, how did you keep that plot
Wait,
all the
can I
way
start and
through?
then you? So I'm going to go with our 10,000 foot answer and then Asha will bring it down to the ground. But one of the greatest gifts I think we have in our writing together is we have created a very distinct mission that drives our writing. And that mission is there, in the world of entertainment, and we're inclusive of books, film, television, podcasts. There is many wonderful stories being told that focus on the trauma and the drama of different races, religions, groups of people. And there's a time and there's a place for that. We believe we happen to be in a culture right now where there is a massive overexposure leaning into trauma and drama is the only way for interested people to learn more about other cultures and races. And it is, in some ways, in absence of the amazing joy and love and laughter that also exists among cultures, among races, among religions. So, Asha and I, we call ourselves the Will and Grace of race. But we have chosen to have the mission that we want to use joy and humor to explore really difficult topics and allow joy and humor to also be an entry for people to enter in to learn more about people who they might not have exposure to in their day-to-day lives, that maybe they have only read about slavery or only read about the Holocaust. And but there's so much more to learn about Jewish people or Black people. So, having a common mission like that and goal, and to know, like, all right, our lens has to be through joy, love, and humor is a foundation for us to start any character and all characters and all story formation moving forward. So that's my 10,000-foot answer of how we do it. How do we do it? Oh my gosh. Well, I have to tell you that Allie, in her past life, maybe she was a person who worked in a loom factory, like creating fabrics or something, because she can throw out a bunch of threads. And at the end of that line of threads that might look messy in the beginning or like too many threads in the beginning, they'll become a beautiful blanket at the end. She's really great at that, creating or crafting the structure of the story. And where I excel is in the emotions of the characters. Why do they feel the way they do? Why do they say the things they say? And what are the repercussions behind their decisions? And how do they work through that? And having those two And
specific.
truth and dialogue.
And yes. And something that is really, really dear to my heart is making sure that our characters sound real, like real people. Sometimes I'll read in a book where girlfriends are talking together and they may start out a sentence with, "Indeed, I did go to the grocery store today." I have never said indeed to a girlfriend in my life. So reenacting the character is really important. And I'm able to lean heavily on Allie's great sense of story so that my characters can be true to that and live up to that reality.
Yeah, that's amazing. It's interesting that you talk about Ali being, a loomer,
I
a
know.
person that looms. I think
That
that's
was good
so dang
though. That's
cool.
the first time Asha's actually pulled that out. That was
It's a new
good.
one. It just came to me.
Didn't know where
Yeah.
you were gonna
Well, and
take
I
that.
think too, like,
That is one of the hardest parts. I mean, all parts of writing a book is hard because the resolution is always the toughest for me to write, hands down. I can set it up all day long. I can make those characters put them through all the situations, but the resolution and ending the story in some kind of manner that makes sense and that is authentic to the story and to the characters is super duper hard. And I love that you focus on dialogue. Dialogue is, for folks out there, it's actually very hard to write, and especially if it's any way humorous,
mm-hmm.
right? I think that when folks get into a dramatic, you know, a dramatic prose, then I feel like it comes a little bit more easily. But if you're trying to, you know, write in any kind of humor, right, it just has to hit.
Oh, yeah.
Timing not too is, much, though.
Timing is so important. The yeah. delivery, I mean, even when I'm reading yeah. it in my mind, I'm timing out what they're
yeah.
what they're saying, making sure those jokes land properly.
Yeah, because Marisol was so funny. I mean, it's just, I was like, can I be your friend? Like, please.
Yeah. You're going to have to get in line. A lot of people turns out want to be Marisol's friend.
We hear that often yeah. from our readers. I want to be friends with these yeah. characters.
And I feel like there's a story in there for her, you know, as a romance writer, right? There's always those nuggets, right? Because that's how we work. Whenever we set a story up, we're planting nuggets for the next stories. And so I'm thinking, oh my gosh, but that's just the way my brain works. But I'm like, oh, I feel like she came from another story and she is, you know, obviously a character in yours, but I just feel like she came from another story. So the both of you tackle stories in such different ways, but they're so complementary because you need somebody that, while both of you are obviously amazing writers, there's one that has the eye for, okay, is this happening? Is the plot going? And another one that has the eye for, is this sounding, you know, authentic to these characters? So how did you guys meet? Like the absolute first day you guys met, and then like when you guys realized, oh my gosh, we got to go write, because I'm just going to share my quick story out there. So I was a registered nurse in my past life and I worked night shift. And so, you know, our lunchtime was at 2:30 in the morning, 3 in the morning. So I was querying at the time and I went to the lunchroom, made my lunch, and another nurse was there. Her name is April. And she was just going on about my cover. And I'm like, cover, right? And she wanted to be an author too, where she's multi-published now. But like I had been working with her all that time and had not realized that she was a writer. And we like became fast friends. I only knew her as April, the other nurse, right? But after that, it just took our friendship another direction. And we're BFFs, you know? So how did you, when was the first time you met? When was like your meet cute? And then when did you all decide, okay, I think there's something here?
Well, our story isn't that dissimilar to yours.
Very close.
So no one's asking me to put an intravenous tube down there. For sure.
Now, we worked in mother-baby, so we were about babies yeah. and mamas and all that stuff. So,
well, we met at a small private school in Seattle. Allie was assistant head of school, and my classroom was right below her office. I was a pre-K teacher in a pre-K through 5 school. And where we really connected
and
was...
And all 4 of our kids attended
school? Oh, yes. All of our kids went there as well. So I've actually been a classroom teacher of Allie's kids over the years. But where we really connected was during our admissions process, where there is the very hand-wringing moment for parents waiting to hear about their 4 and 5-year-olds and whether or not they've been accepted to this very exclusive private school. And also the funny moments for Allie and myself when we're watching those parents and their kids and their spouses thinking that this school is the be-all and end-all of education and I just got to get in. And their kids like picking their nose and flicking it on somebody, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We connected over the absurdity of all of that. The love involved in all of that because we really, really cared about supporting those families and encouraging them that if this wasn't the school that was right for their child, there was one out there that was even better for their child. And as we would debrief, we had a head of school that was a brilliant educator, but took this process very seriously, as she should have, and as we all did under her direction, talking about the kids and what their different skills were. But afterwards, Allie and I would traipse down to my kitchen in my classroom where I inevitably had cooked something with the kids that day, and Allie would eat the rest of it. And we'd joke and we'd laugh and we'd say things that were probably inappropriate for the meeting that we had just had, but we could unleash it on each other. We found a similar sense of humor in each other, and we would joke about writing books about our experiences working with families and working in schools. And we would joke about what stories we would put in these imaginary books one day. And
how we could say all the things that we really wanted to say, actually say out loud, whether it be to a child, to the child's parents, to a coworker, we're like, we could just put all those inner thoughts.
And while those, you know, jokes and ribbing was going on, we were those parents.
Totally.
Our mm-hmm. kids were at that school. So mm-hmm. we knew that we were making kind of light and fun of ourselves. And that was part yeah. of the fun as well. So I went off to start a catering company. Allie went off to found an international school in the Seattle area. That's a dual language school. And I was always a cook, and Allie started to host family for the Jewish holidays. And Allie's not a big cook. So she'd call me up, Asha, I'm having 20 people over for Passover. Can you make the food for me?
Never cooked a piece of meat in my life. They all want brisket.
And my catering company was a soul food catering company. I know nothing about Jewish food.
Yeah, I was like,
wow.
It's close enough.
And so I did. I would come over and convince Allie, don't tell anybody I was here. You tell them you made this brisket. Take all the credit for it. And she did, which she should do.
But now everyone knows.
They do know now.
It's been revealed.
I'm
too close to the family now. They are. And Allie got this great idea for our first book. I'm going to let you pick up this story right here.
Yeah, when I was establishing my new school, I was traveling around looking at some similar schools. And I was at this one particular school in San Francisco that is beautiful, but its decor is all very pale, pale yellows, white. And it was in the middle of admission season, and the director of admissions at this particular school, who's a friend of mine, is very, very dark-skinned. And it just struck me in that moment, because it was admissions, there was this very pale environment. And then all these white parents were in the foyer of the school as she and I were saying goodbye, like, you know, frothing, like, when's that woman going to shut up and stop talking to her so then, like, I can bust in to talk to her? And I'm like, God, this is a really interesting scenario. The idea that a person of color holding the keys to the kingdom that all these white people want in on. And I marinated on that idea for a little while and then called up Asha and was like, hey, do you want to get together and talk about schools and race? And this was pre-2020, so I didn't say it in a beautiful, you know, well-crafted way. And Asha and I met for coffee. And, you know, we were just ignorant enough of how we were ever going to do this to say, sure, let's do it. And 14 months later, we had our first book sold. So
that's fantastic.
You know, it's a great story about how we got to that point. But I would say, you know, there were three things in that first book that set us up for success. Number one, ignorance can be bliss. Like, we didn't know what to be afraid of. We didn't know how hard it was going to be. So that was first. Second of all, and not dissimilar to being a nurse, right? When you're a teacher, when you're a nurse, like your life is very structured, mm-hmm. and there's very little time to like pee. I mean, it just, you know. So Asha and I coming out of schools, we, you know, we'd never been ladies that lunched or went to tennis. Like, so we had the same level of commitment to just sit in the chair and do it. Because that's what you do when you're in schools. No one cares if you're tired, hungover, you know, anything. So we had that same level of commitment from the get-go. And then the third, which was just sheer dumb luck that we really had no idea, is it just became so clear in that first book that my strengths were Asha's weaknesses and Asha's weaknesses were my strengths. So we just tell people as humanities women, we do bad math and 1 + 1 makes 1 great writer. And so we didn't know that going in. That's really the luckiest part of our journey and that we still like each other.
Yeah, working with your friend is a completely different level, right? Because you have to be able to give suggestions and all of that. So things are still good between the both of you. I know you guys are working on your fourth book right now.
Well, can I say can I say one other thing to that? Because I think this is important if, you know, anyone really thinks we have something to say. But, you know, we have to talk about and work through really hard things, because we are writing about race and religion and parenting and privilege, all really hot button topics. And then we're trying to do it by making them funny. And like some things hit a little too close to home, or we're like, maybe that doesn't. So we get into it. It's not like, oh, it's been rosy the whole time. Sometimes we get into it hardcore and it's something hard. And sometimes we get into it and we realize like, oh, I'm just hungry. But you know, we both firmly believe that moving through hard work brings you closer, not further, because we have to find a common ground because we're raising a child together, you know, with each book that we do. So, you know, we have made it, and we've gotten better at, like, when it's hard, we've gotten better at working through when it's hard.
Yeah. When you have your eye on the same prize, you got to be determined to get there. If someone loses their determination at any point, but certainly during a disagreement, you know, your product probably wasn't going to be good anyways, but you have to determine what your purpose is. And ours is to put out good books for great readers. And if we forget that, that's when it's going to break down. But I really want to do this. And Allie really wants to do this. And just like in a marriage or raising a family, if you want to raise a good kid, you have to do it together. If you come to blows and headbang and all that, you have to work through it, because the product at the end is what matters. Not our feelings, not what we're doing during that day, not if we're hungry or not. It's that book that we want to offer to readers, that we want to share that experience so badly with them. We're going to stick through any fight. And we have them. I usually win, by the way.
Well, you know, you talk about like the ignorance of getting into publishing and not knowing yet, you know, what's going on. But I would care to say that like there's so much of what you have done in the past, right? That really has contributed. It's not just time or determination, but the idea of you guys dealing with different kinds of people through hard things, because I assume as teachers, you have really faced the gamut of what students have said or what parents have said and the issue, you know, life issues. So, you know, both being educators really is such an asset to even in the way you guys communicate, I'm sure.
Oh, it's right? The best training ground for us, for sure. Mm-hmm. You are going to come across as a teacher, as any kind of administrator, educator, support person in a school. You're going to see everyone from the time moms are pregnant to that child first coming into the school, to grandparents who come for Grandparents' Day, aunts and uncles who come to pick up the kids sometimes. You're involved in nearly every layer of their family, but also in their issues. We have to know when families are having hard times so that we can figure out how to support the children. So they have to reveal their problems to us. And it makes for an amazing milieu to observe. I mean, we get to see everyone. And their stories are
that's
so
how I
vast.
Feel.
And nursing's got to be similar, too.
Yeah.
You're there for
I mean,
good things
it's...
and bad.
And you really see the family dynamics that occur and the little things that's unsaid and the you know, this the body language and the message and the vibe in the room. It's really something that, you know, we could say that, okay, this is the second career or third career, whatnot, you know, coming into almost midlife or what. But all of those things really contributed, right, to this career of writing about people, which is basically what this is. This is, you know, writing about people and about humans and their lives. So, oh my goodness, we could talk for like a million minutes, but I want to ask about what's next. So what are you guys working on? I know that Asha is in Allie's house in Idaho. I mean, so it's so awesome that you guys get to spend time together. Can you say anything about your next project?
Oh, sure. Yes, you start, Chatty. Yes, I am chatty. I love it.
No, we're actually, you know, we're super excited about our next book before we reveal the title. Don't know if you felt this way, but our, you know, for our first three books, although they're very different stories, they do all are set up against the backdrop of a school. And with you know, the better half, we definitely felt like, all right, this, you know, they've all been great, but we've done this. And it's something that was familiar enough that, you know, we always had ideas to pull from. Like, our next book has to be so decidedly different, nothing to do with schools at all. And so it was a big challenge for us and, you know, a little bit scary, but a massive growth opportunity to create, still using humor, still our same mission, but a story that, you know, takes place and is about totally different things. And we are happy to say that we love, love, love this book that's called Boss.
Oh, yay.
Yeah, it's called Boss Lady. And it will come out either late summer or fall 2024. But there's definitely a feeling of, even though we're also exhausted by this story because we've been working on it so much as we're together doing the final editing, there is a celebratory feeling of like, okay, we did this. We are sort of one-trick ponies with the school situation. Yeah. So we're super excited.
Just as a side note, like, how many hours? So when you're together a week. Like, give me the amount of hours you're actually working and then, like, not drinking wine or not talking about, not catching up on family and friends. So, like, when you guys sit down for, like, a, you know, like a session.
Yeah.
Well, how long are you guys? Is this, like, an intense 1 week?
Oh, yes. Because it happens to be a week where Allie's amazing husband is out of town. So now I am not only the writing partner, I'm the
husband.
I'm the husband this week. And I was woken up by the dog because I was on the couch. So she was hitting me with her tail in the face. And I woke up and realized, wait a minute, Allie's oldest daughter starts driving today, which means I can't take her car. So how am I going to get the younger one to school? And I had to rush down and tell Allie, we're out of sorts here. And she goes, oh, yeah.
I love this. You know, it's so cool.
And we're writing between parenting.
Yes, absolutely. And one other lucky thing is we are not wine drinkers. Yeah. So we do wake up fresh and ready. And I have to because Allie she's in charge of our schedule. And
I'm the total.
Interesting.
So it is very much plugged in how many hours, but it's probably 6 to 8 every day.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
But it'll be like 40 minutes. I got to switch to laundry. 75 minutes. We got to go get a kid. Like, we're actually, this is a really interesting point is that, you know, writing is hard because any creative endeavor, you can't do anything in 20 minutes because you're like, I'm not checking, you know, I don't have the low hanging fruit of checking emails. Like, you need the time to drop in. But Asha and I, where we have been in our lives personally, while we're trying to do this professionally, we've had to get good at like 45 minutes here, 70 minutes here, 20 here. And then in the course of the day, it's 8 hours, but it's not just, you know, sitting down and the house is peaceful and we're, you know, attacking every sentence. It is much more patchwork than that.
Yeah. Which is what Nina does in The Better Half. She has that's to right. manage everything because that's just what it is being a
yeah,
mom.
Yeah, I just found that so relatable.
A partner, a daughter, a sister, a friend, all that. Those are all jobs. And each one of us has a lot of titles that we have to fulfill.
Yeah, you're right. Oh my gosh. Yeah, Nina, every time she had to go from one thing to another, I was like, oh, I feel you. It's like button it up, you know, like button up this moment. Let's move on with a, you know, brand new face, right. You know, like, okay, I'm ready for you. What's the next thing? I just love it. So what are you all reading right now? Can you give us a recommendation, one each?
Yes, I'm reading Carmen and Grace, and it is by a writer. His last name is Aquino. And just fascinating, our next character is Afro-Puerto Rican, and it's really giving me, which I often learn from other writers and their brilliance, some added insight into the Puerto Rican side of our character. It's a beautiful story, and I'm just getting started on it.
Oh, great. Yeah. Great. How about you, Allie?
I am reading, so while we're finishing the fourth book, we're starting all our thinking for the fifth. So this is a little bit the divide and conquer. Asha's really reading Carmen and Grace to, you know, make sure our dialogue of our Afro-Puerto Rican character feels authentic. I'm reading in that phase of reading, thinking about our fifth book, which, dun, 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 is actually going to have a protagonist who is our age, which is slightly terrifying for us and anyone listening. Our age is not in our 40s. I'm reading How Not to Drown in a Glass of Water by Anne Bruce.
Yeah, love that. Oh my gosh. And finally, I ask all of my guests this question, but what makes you go? So we've heard so much about the both of you and how you guys like manage this book and your partnership, but what is something that you do regularly to keep your creativity?
You know, people talk about love language. Mine is food.
Oh, oh yes. Man.
I just know when I come to stay with Allie, I'm going to get to show the family how much I love them by cooking for them. So I love to create. Yeah. I love the science of food. I like reading recipes, creating my own. So that's my creative outlet.
I'd also say it's your meditative outlet.
It is too.
You never get flustered.
Nope. It's something
that's great.
I can do. And I also like the kudos I get after it too.
Yeah.
I like to watch people full and pat their tummies and go, that was good. And know I was responsible for that.
So. Oh, I love that. I love it.
And I'm a huge outdoors and nature hound. And you know, my story spinning, and I've been this way since I've been a child. I've always been a huge runner and particularly a trail runner. So I am out in the mountains several days a week, and I'm strict with myself. I only let myself listen to a podcast once, maybe twice a week. And the other times I'm on the trails is really my time to just let my mind wander and not feel the pressure to create. And that's usually when the biggest creation happens. So that is really my favorite time in life, is just being in the mountains and running. And then I usually get back to the car and call Asha and like, blah, vomit.
Lots of calls.
And also just to save Asha's mind, heart, and soul, I am some. I'm like a dog. Like, it's not that I'm making Asha drive my children around right she's here. Like, I have to get out a lot of energy first so I can settle in and we can work. So I've been going to work out to take my kids to school for her own personal survival.
It's just as much for me that I do that as it is for her.
It's like Allie needs her wiggles out first.
I make the calories and Allie burns them off.
Yeah.
So see, that partnership works in so many ways.
I know. I feel like you guys are connected all the way through, and I love it.
Yin and yang.
Oh my gosh. Well, oh my goodness, ladies. Thank you so much, everyone, for joining us here at the Stories to Live podcast. And thanks, Allie and Asha, for such a great time. And we'll see you again.
Good to see you, Tim.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining me, Tiff Marcello, at the Stories to Live podcast. You can follow me through my newsletter at tiffmarcello.com and Instagram and Facebook page under Tiff Marcello and the Stories to Live podcast. You can support this podcast by leaving a rating, spreading the word, and picking up one of my books for you and a friend on my website at tiffmarcello.com. I'll see you again.